Thank you, Rabbi Sauer, for your kind words. Thank you for all of you coming here. As Rabbi Sauer just said, it's quite impressive to see that people answered the call, so to say. It seems to be there's an interest for all what is being done here. I want to specifically thank also Rabbi Trestman, who pondered it, but in addition, I want to note here that I'm very pleased to see the Chaim Fassman, Rosh Kodel, with us. It's certainly a chizuk for all we are doing here. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help you, and all of us, we should have siyata d'shamayim, matzliach what we're going to do here. I want to add, and just for a moment, another aspect to what Rabbi Saul was saying. You know, usually when you talk about Chosh Mishpot, so the understanding is what we're talking about here is preventing people from stealing, chomos, like Rabbi Sauer said. I would like to take a different approach, if I may. People want to be correct and right. I do believe that people are good. I don't need Anne Frank for that. We know people are good. People want to do the right thing. Conditions of life sometimes create pressure, so therefore they don't do the right thing. But in principle, people want to do the right thing. But what is the right thing? What is the right thing? So, you know, when it comes to how to put on tefillin, how to wear tzitzis, how to keep Shabbos, people are familiar. When it comes to day-to-day activities, in day-to-day life, you know, commerce, and anybody has to do something of commerce. If he goes to the grocery and buys something, he is in commerce. There's no such thing. Because Boho established life in this fashion. So you have to interact with people, and money is the essential part that makes people go, be, motivate, and so on and so forth. It's the tool that Jiboko uses to move people around. Having said so, that section that deals with actual life on a day-to-day basis is Chosh Mishpat. So regardless of the Gezla aspect, what do I have to do exactly? So how should I behave? So that's the importance of it. That's what I feel. In fact, I just may add this sentence: if I would have this, the possibility and the input, this should have started already at early age in schools, when the infancy, so to say, when people grow up with it, that they should understand that when they're learning Shoshanah v'Saporo, they're learning Mafkid. You're talking about actual life. You're talking about real life, not some kind of hypothetical longness. It's real life. So without further ado, let me come to the topic as such. The topic of today is intellectual property, which all of us in the world that we live in is affected by. It seems to be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before Moshiach comes, we're advancing further and further and further, so the inner part of creation become revealed to us. The inner part of creation, not as much as spirituality is concerned, but you see, even as far as the physical aspect of creation, all of a sudden we relate to senses like reality. We relate to the internet, reality, you know, electricity, reality, whatever there should be. You know, there are waves. We don't see them. We describe them as waves, right, and so on and so forth. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives an introspect into another world. And this becomes basically the foundation of our behavior. Intellectual property, therefore, right, is part of it, a major part of it. I don't have to tell you. Today, people don't rob bank anymore. What they do is they try identity theft. What they try is to break a password and to enter, to have access, you know, to billions of dollars, which are there just in numbers, you know. Once upon a time, people stored money under the mattress. So people don't do that anymore. Bill Gates is very wealthy, but, you know, not because he has dollars under his mattress, but because, you know, it's recorded somewhere. I guess that he owns shares and other things. I don't know. As far as real estate is concerned, probably he's not such a wealthy person. People who are just much wealthier than him. But as far this part is concerned, yes. So there are numbers here. Some numbers stored, right? And I don't want now to bore you with that. I don't want to bore you with another fascinating subject, because It has a lot to do with halacha, as far as the parameters of gzeila are concerned. This is not the classic gzeila we know about. But this is not precisely what I want to discuss here. We're talking about intellectual property, innovations, ideas. And what we have to discuss with first, before anything, is there ownership, is there balance on an idea, on something which is not tangible. That's number one. Then the second part will be, if it's so, that we will prove that there might be ownership on a non-tangible assets and whatever there should be, an idea, there's ownership on that, there's a balance on that. So now, how does it fit with the regular criteria of gzeila, of stealing, and so on and so forth, right? So this is the issue that we're discussing here. Now, you had here the first Mari Mokovi, if I may ask you to look for a moment. You know, this one, we like to do things professional. I have to say this. We like to do things professional. This part, this one here today, is not precisely professional. We discussed it a lot. So we hope that it will be improved here. It was done somewhat, you know, the last morning. So, you see, it's in halacha we know it as the subject of Dovo She'in Boi Mamish. Dovo She'in Boi Mamish, there is no substance. Now, Dovah She'esh B'mamish is any tangible object. Dovah She'esh B'mamish. What's Dovah She'esh B'mamish? And Dovah She'esh B'mamish, we have two kinds of Dovah She'esh B'mamish. One kind of Dovah She'esh B'mamish is what we call in Halacha Avir Chatzeroi. Avir Chatzeroi is the ear of space, the ear of his courtyard. It's not tangible, but nevertheless, there's a reality to it, some kind of reality to that. And then there's another kind of Dovah She'esh B'mamish. And this is, if a person is walking, for example, so yes, walking itself is a physical action, a physical activity, but nevertheless, what is achieved by it, so to say, is not considered to be a Dovah She'esh B'mamish. As far kinyonim are concerned, so we are saying in both instances, namely, if I want to be makne, avir chatzero, the ear of the courtyard, I want to make a kinyan that you are going to do an action. Both are called a kinyan Dovah She'esh B'mamish. I don't want to talk about activities, making a kinyan on activities. Because you wonder, why is it a Dovah She'esh B'mamish? I'm walking. I don't want to talk about it. I'm just mentioning it for the sake of the record. What is important to me now is the first instance, which is Avir Chatzero. Avir Chatzero is the ear of the courtyard. That's called Dovah She'esh B'mamish. Dovah She'esh B'mamish of Avir Chatzero, you cannot be makne. You cannot transfer ownership on that. This is what you see here in Simon Reishut Beis. In Reishut Beis, if you look into it, it says, Ein odo makne lebe mecher vele be matono. You cannot transfer ownership, neither via a sale or bestow it in this or other way. Elo dovo sheyesh b'mamish. Aval dovo she'ein b'mamish, something which is not tangible. Eino nikne. Lefichoch ha-makne lechaver achil aspiras dekel ze. So, achil aspiras dekel ze is very similar to the case that I told you about talking. O diras ba'ize, the living in there, lo ekono. Achikne guf ba'ize lo doboy, the guf idon le'echol peroiso. Now, really what is missing here, and this is therefore what I said earlier, they're not very professional, it doesn't mention the second part of it, which is really of essence for me, and this is Avir Chatzero. Avir Chatzero. You cannot be makne Avir Chatzero either. The air of the court that you cannot be makne. I will not enter the long list of it. The Rambam mentions those two instances in two different places, which is not material for me. Again, what is important for me is only that principle. Dovash in the mamish, like Avir Chatzero, you cannot be makne. Period. You need to have a tangible object to be makne. I will ask a question, a longish question. If the chesaron here that we're talking about is the deficiency here, because in hilchos kinyanim you need to do the act on the chefetz itself or related to a chefetz, related to an object, a tangible object. And therefore, Dovah Shem B'mamish, Avich HaTzeirot, being that it's not a tangible object, the Kinyan cannot be Nitfas. Or do we say, no, it's even more than that. It is because Avich HaTzeirot, we are saying, you don't really own it. You don't really own it. You cannot own anything which is not tangible. In order to own something, it needs to be tangible. It's a condition in ownership, not a deficiency in Kinyan. That's the question. So where would be the proof? The proof would be, what happens in a situation when you do not need to make a Maaseh Kinyan, and nevertheless, ownership is transferred? What would be the case? Yerusha. An inheritance. An inheritance, you don't need to make the Maaseh Kinyan. I could walk and make the Kinyan for you. Yerusha. The Torah makes the Kinyan. So in this particular case, the question will be, what will happen if you want to be Moirish, Dovah She'im B'mamish? Can you? Are you B'mamish? That's the question. You can. Is Dovah She'im B'mamish be Yerusha or not? That's the question. Now, this is a major machlok taposkim between Ramon and the Shach. In Simin Reish and Vov, here you have it. This is the second Maramokim that you have here. It's the Ramon and the end of Simin Reish and Vov. That's here. That's the Ramon. The Ramon says clearly that you cannot be Yorish Dovah She'im B'mamish. The person says, let's talk about a modern scenario. Air rights. Air rights. Avich HaTzeirot is in principle air rights. So air rights here, it says, is a Dovah She'im B'mamish, and you cannot be Mayrishit. You cannot transfer ownership even by Yerusha. It would indicate, as far as we are concerned, if we take this as a proof that you cannot own Dovah She'im B'mamish. There's a chisson in Baal. It's not a chisson in Kinyan, it's a chisson in Baal. That's what you would say. Now, the Shach argues that. The Shach, if you look here, in Sif Cotton, Sif Cotton Dali, thank you very much. In the end, he says, he quotes the Marik. Okay, so he, and again, we don't have the time for that. There's a concept of Tovis Anor. I have a certain benefit that I could have, which is worth money. Tovis Anor. You know, I will here become superficial and not enter the finesses of the Shaila here. Basically, what the Shach said here, that if the Dovo She'im B'mamish, is tachas yado yerush, meaning the yerush controls it. If I have control on this ear, on the air right, I'm in control of it. Then you are yerush. The nesivut agrees. The nesivut agrees with the shah. So then at least we have a machlokes here. At least according to the shah and the nesivut, we have a situation where we say that dovah she'im b'mamish, you could own it. You cannot transfer ownership by a Kinyan, but you can certainly have it transferred to somebody else in a situation where Kinyan is not necessary. Or with the regular Gedorim, with the regular criteria of Kinyan are not applicable. That is the Unto the Jew, that's the Balaam that they're saying. Now I want to tell you something, and I mentioned yesterday in a Shia in a different place. And here, in Yiddish, there's a term. You are catching the fish before the net, which means that you're saying the bottom line before you came to the bottom line. But sometimes you need to do it in order to have a better understanding of the matter. So I will tell you what it is. I spoke about the topic of Dinin Amachus. And over there I mentioned the Masham. My good friend Arasawa was pleased to hear that there's such a Masham. The Masham, you know, from the great Poskim. Masham writes in Afshuva, if there is a Machloket Poskim, and as you know, you might know that when it comes to Choshe Mishpat, there is always a major difficulty. Namely, it's very different in Psak, as far as Choshe Mishpat is concerned, where in Choshe Mishpat, there's no Kula in Chumra. If it's a Kula for me, it's a Chumra for somebody else. By the word, you know. If I hold on to the money, so then it's a Kula for me and a Chumra for him, and vice versa. So, you cannot apply the regular criteria of Yitzhak Vahetzah. So, and in addition, what do you have? A concept that is called Kimli. The person could say, well, I prove that this opinion is wrong. Right? So there are major complications in Psak, as far as Mishpat is concerned. says there must be something very interesting. If they are machlokes is a poskim, and in Dina the Malchusa, they rule like one opinion, you could apply this opinion. Very interesting. Which relieves many, many difficulties in Psak. These two lines, those two lines in the Mashal. Why do I say that here in this context? But I would like to say, if I may, we have a machlokes apostle, but there's no question about it that in Dina Malchusa we have here a principle that you could transfer. No question. You could transfer intellectual property under conditions. We're going to discuss it. But it's certainly in within the realms of possibility to do it. Dina Malchusa recognizes ownership and recognizes transfer of ownership into the intellectual property. So therefore, if we now are speaking about Dovo She'im B'Mamish, and we are going to see in a moment that intellectual property is within the definition of Dovo She'im B'Mamish, and we do have a Dina Malchusa that says that you own and you could transfer, so we have here a Mahalof to go on. So really, this should be the last few sentences of the Shia. But I just want to show you how eventually we get to that. In other words, I prefer to show you the bottom line so that you understand where are we trying to get to. Right. What's the avenue that we are choosing to go to? So I don't want to get stuck with the memoria. I don't want to hear to be in a situation when I have to mention time and again, well, you have a remor, the remor is against you. Well, teach you the process. We will try to take the avenue that Dovash Ein B'Mamish, in this particular case, will not be an obstacle to ownership. And we want to prove it that from the poskim you do see, that there is a mainstream of poskim who understood and accepted that intellectual property in itself is not to be negated by the concept of Dovash Ein B'Mamish, neither as far ownership is concerned, nor as transfer of ownership is concerned. So, here let's talk now about the Achoinim. So we're taking a leap now, so to say, and we go straight to the Tshuvas here. The most famous Tshuva, and basically the one who opened, so to say, the door to this discussion, was the Shlomo Meshech. From the great Gedolei Hador of what you call today the 19th century, right? Lemisporo, Lembergorf, Anakauach. So there's a line here which is incredible. It's just incredible. Obviously, you know, this issue, this problem of a person writing a sefer than somebody else trying to print it without permission of the Mechaber, and so on and so forth. No, this was an old story. Nothing new about it. And this forum, the old forum, you have the old print, you could see Charomim, as you mentioned here too, the Charomim given, you cannot, Achem 10 years, nobody is permitted to reprint this shaft, other shaft, and so on and so forth. So you have it. There was already, we already had a certain precedence to this kind of situation. Now, there are two kinds of haromim that were to be found. And he mentioned it already. You have sometimes a person printing a shas. Well, shas, the great people, the luminaries of Klal Yisrael who wrote and edited the shas, lived many, many centuries back, right? So anybody who is printing the shas is not printing something that he innovated. But then you have something else. It might be, first of all, that he maybe has a new kind of tribe setting, whatever it should be, you know, the Tzuras HaDovo, how he made it, you know, the setup of it. Okay, fine. It might or might not be of great innovation. And then you have people who are Mechadosh Chidush HaTorah. No, the person is a Chidush HaTorah. And that's already something else. If it's Mechadosh Chidush HaTorah, so then he now is innovator. And Befrati for the kind of Chidush HaTorah that nobody even thought about it, hopefully Moshe Rabbeinu thought about it, then certainly it's some kind of innovation, and then if he prints it, a perush of it, and something of that sort, then we're already talking about intellectual property in the kind that is familiar to us. He makes already this distinction, and he says basically the Haromim that we find in the early prints there about Shas, Chumashim, and so forth, where the content as such was not innovated, wasn't brought into this world by the Machaber, by the print, I mean. But somebody else, obviously, if you are Mechadish Kedusha Torah and so forth, no question about it. You certainly have the right and the bias on it. What's the raya? No, ever not in Yeshiva? What's the raya? So he also asked, what's the raya? I'll tell you, instead of a poshut, he says. I'm telling you, instead of a poshut, be yoyt. But there used to be a fellow, his name was Rabbi Yank, Avrom Yank ben Rabishov. Ever heard from Rabishov? Rabishov is a shtetl in Galicia. In Poland. Rabbi Yank ben Rabishov. The himtzi as a cheshmel machine, right? Yeah, he has the mamash deloshen here. I don't, it's a very small print. And my dear Nochum, if you're going to make this thing here, make it readable. Readable and readable. Okay, so I hope that you notice that I'm not an American native. And English is my fourth language, not even my first. Okay, so here in the middle, it's hard for you to see, but the Loshen of it. Varinoida is known as Rabbi Yankee and Robeshov. She also has a machine. He innovated the calculator. That's what we call today. Cheshmer machine. Kol yom of kibbles choroi mi'akir bevarshe. Akir is the Keter Yoram Hoide. Right? Keter Yoram Hoide used to be the one that admitted Misha Beirach that he was Volgahagit, you know. So, the Keter Yoram Hoide was the Tsar of Russia in this particular case. So there were different versions. There were very Austrian versions, there were Russian versions of Kesar. But that doesn't mean that this one is a Russian one. And so he was paid royalty. Simple as that. He was paid royalty all his life. Says the, now comes the famous line. Says the Shalom Eishiv, It shouldn't be that our Torah should be in this other way inferior to what they take as obvious. It's obvious by them that you have to pay royalties to somebody who to the innovator. So if this is the case by them, certainly it has to be true as well. A kavachom is a difficult kavachom, you know. Difficult kavachom because the criteria, as you are going to see in Choshen Mishnah, are completely different. And this itself is a very important, fascinating, and fundamental subject to discuss, but I don't have the time, nor is it the place not to talk about it. This really should be the introduction. What is Choshen Mishnah? Choshen Mishnah is something completely different than what you understand of another code of law, something completely different. But so therefore, the Kal Vachomer Keshele Atzmoy doesn't really work. Gzele by us is completely legal, not moral. When we talk about Gzele, it has nothing to do with morality. It has to do with rights, legal rights. And those legal rights are established back to the Bohut in the way he wants to define the criteria. When it says in Chazal, V'yigzor ha-chanit miyad ha-mitzri, and he took the chanit, the spear from the mitzri, which describes the ma'asik zeile, we're talking about an act of disowning somebody's object by an action. And we don't do it by an action, if you just cause it, which is called gromi gami, then according to most possible, it's not the rights at all. It's not a ma'asik zeile, not a ma'asik mazik. And there's no doubt in anybody's mind that any other legal code will not make any kind of a differentiation between a direct gami and between a ma'asik zeile of any sort. And the reason is simple, because from the standpoint, from the viewpoint of moral behavior, there should be no difference if I cause damage to somebody else via a physical act or by gami. Why should be the difference? But there is a difference. So therefore, this kind of chomer that he says, if you have a proof from Bedinayim that they consider intellectual property to be owned, although it's not tangible, therefore kal vachomer, and you have to pay a person for using his innovation, so, and therefore kal vachomer, the same applies, lavdafka, doesn't have to be. And in fact, his successor, the Rabbonus in Lemberg, he just turned the page, the Bifitzchok, the Bitzchok Shmelkish, doesn't understand it. He quotes the Shalom Eishiv and doesn't understand it. You have it here on the second page here. You see, in this page. Not the first page of the book, it's the second page. Non-professional again. And it is somewhere in the first paragraph. He quotes the Shalom Eshu. Mashi Kosav. The Mechadshim Eze Melocha. What the Shalom Eshu wrote, that if the Mechadish some kind of innovation, that's what it means basically. Ein Roshai Acha Lasois B'matkunto, he cannot copy it, he cannot make an image like it, B'li Rishusa, without permission. This is the line that I just told you. This is the Enoi. So now, what are the arguments? The Atero Nema Gamani Bechinom Vato Bechinom. Vin Atero Kodem Lachtonboy. So, the first thing he said, well, if you're talking about terrorist foreign, who said, he had an obligation to have people share his wisdom. So, I mean, Ma'ani Bechinom, you know? You shouldn't be paid for that. So, therefore, some of them should be able to copy. In addition, they got the Klei Melochos. But in addition, I'm saying that Beis Yitzchok, Klei Melochos, you're talking about any kind of an object, a tool. Im Eilu Rishonim Ma'amalchus, Sheshayach La'achus Olam, if the Malchus, Mitzadina La'achus, did not give him the ownership, so to say, forever, right? Why, I don't understand why should there be a prohibition that somebody else should copy it and do alike. He doesn't say why. Do I have to prove, like the Shalom Eshu is not proving his point? He doesn't feel that he has to prove his point either. In other words, there's an argument here. He said, Shalom Eshu said, "Loi tiyotor shleimu shelano kisicha b'teilo shelahem." And today the Beis Yitzchok says, "Well, I don't know what the issue should be. No. What is it?" Well, but the Beis Yitzchok takes this for a given that everybody knows that Dovah Shem b'mamish, right? There should be no gzeilit. And let's assume that he owns it. Let's assume. For argument's sake. But there should be no gzeilah b'dovah shem b'mamish. Yerusha, right? Something else. That's the term of transfer ownership. But gzeilah is, as we said earlier, v'yigzeh v'chalitz v'yad ha-mitzri. In order to disown somebody, you need to have to do an act, a physical act of taking the object and disown the owner. This is what the Beis Yitzchok means to say. Now, what we do here is, that yes, ownership, certainly there could be. They take it for granted. Their problem is in disowning the other one. The Maika Gzeile, that's the problem. And here the Shalom Eshu says, Dova Poshuter is. The Bishitok says, it's not Dova Poshuter at all. But the odd thing here is, it's not terrorist concern. In terrorist teams, the Bishitok would agree that you are not permitted to disown somebody from the debitor of somebody else. Unless, it's only because the Ani Bechinom thinks the person is obligated to teach Torah Bechinom, so therefore he cannot prohibit somebody else to copy. But otherwise he would say yes, you cannot do it. Maybe it would indicate that he said that you cannot even have an ownership on Dovah Shem B'Mamish, and therefore he said, well, yes, we have ownership in mundane innovations, but you don't have ownership in terror. Something of that sort. Very difficult. So I don't want really to go into the nitty-gritty of the Bechitva, but just I want to tell you, in very, very interesting Raya, the Tugdoy the Oilon brought that there is ownership, and not only ownership, but there is also prohibition, not a modern prohibition, it's shy to say, it's applicable. That my segdili could be even if it's not in the classic scenario of v'yigzel achalik me'adam mitzvi, of taking the object physically. What's the right? That the right is a gross and elegant. Same is right. Now we'll tell you a moment who the two dirty bear. You have here Gemara Nun Tef in Sanhedrin? Omer Rav Yochanan, Oy vit Yechovim, Shoyetik Batei Ruchai Mitzvi. Go and learn Torah. Oy tik bater it says here. So then he is chayv mitzvah. Shene ma toyr tzivul lonu moish merosho lonu says Chazal. It's an inheritance of us. Merosho lonu merosho. V'lo Elohen they did not inherit terror. It's not theirs. So therefore, it's careful. Fekti gemor hakashe takhe. V'lich shevegabe sheve mitzvah. Okay. So the gemor has a kashe. why isn't it counted in within, why isn't it in the Shem Mitzvah and Noyaf? And the Gemara says, yes, anyway, it's Gezel. It's in within Gezel. In other words, we own Torah, we have legal rights on Torah, not only moral rights, we have legal rights on Torah. And a goy who is learning Torah, for some reason, steals from us. Hard to understand what is the mechata, what did he take away of me? Right? So there's a Merum Mesoda here. The Nesif says here that we're talking about a goy who, it's very interesting, he's talking about a goy who's learning Torah Iyun, and this is Poigim, that it affects somewhere the Kedusha of Torah, and therefore it has a negative effect on us. That's what he's saying. It goes to the spiritual realms. Fine. Or it might be a little bit different. We could say it from a legal aspect. The Torah did not want us to share her with non-Jews, with goy. So we have an obligation not to let him doing it. If we have an obligation, we are not permitted to teach goyim Torah. As such, if he goes on his own and wants to do it, so we have to stop him. Oh, he is not permitted to do it because you see clearly the intention of the Torah is that he should not learn it. And if he does so, he takes away from our privilege. He did own that. So this may be with a hapshat. But if it should be here, the goy is learning Torah, right? He didn't do the yigdol achanis miyad mitzvah. There was no physical gzeila here. Nevertheless, the Gemara here says, it's chayv mitzvah. Chayv mitzvah. Rambam says, einu nerak, but chayv mitzvah. Now, one could say that maybe by going, if we look at it, that's what you could say. You could say that maybe as far as going are concerned, the criteria of the daily by them will be different than by Eden. Could be argued. And you know what? Mr. Contrarian, look at him now, would say so. I would say so. But nevertheless, if I took the oil who bought this right from this Gemara to say that dividing the definition of Gzele also in the situation, also in the case where it's not a physical disowning of somebody else, not a mighty gzeila, a physical mighty gzeila. And those two came from two different worlds. One was Amud Eish, Amud Eish was Alexander, sender from Reifen, who was from the Talmidim of Sol Salanta, who wrote a Jewish sefer called Amud Eish. It's a sin sefer, which he didn't reprint for some reason, only like 40 years ago. So it's a very long truth about this subject, about the subject of intellectual property. And over there, he brings his raya. And the other one was the Machne Chaim. If you heard the Machne Chaim was, they called him the Hungarian Reb Chaim. Very long, Reb Chaim Seifer. Was a very famous Seifer. So for those who don't know, Seifer. So the Machne Chaim also brings the raya. Both bring this raya. Okay. So we have those who say that therefore, in even intellectual property, there's a mighty gzeila. There is a mighty gzeila that applies to them. Before Jan, so let's talk about our issue first, right? So according to those, we have a very clear mahalach. The Amud Eish and similar notes also the Machne Chaim and the Divrei Malkiel as well, right? The Divrei Malkiel, you have it here in the Maram Mekom, it's a Chelek Shlishi here, Simen Kutno Zayin. All of them talk about different situations when a person came up with some kind of innovation. Sometimes it was a design, it was the case of the Divrei Malkiel. Sometimes it was like the calculator that you had here. All kinds of innovations that people came up with and somebody else wanted to did copy it, and therefore now was called to Besen by the innovator. And they passed in Taloch Lamaise that you cannot do it. And if there were damages caused, you are liable for the damages based on what Peter spoke now. Without which we apply the regular Gedolim of Gzele on this. It seems to me that from a truth of Reb Moshe, if you could look it up, I don't know how authentic this is and how much reliable it is, but probably there is. In Jewish, Reb Moshe, Chelek, Rachaim, Dalet, Simen, Mem, they were master of your test. Something, right. Whatever. So it seems to be, if you look in the truth over there, also it seems to be that he is in this opinion. And he doesn't explain why, but from those short truths, that he has also that balus and consequently also a maishik zeile would apply with all the consequences that come with it. That's what it seems to be. But I want to tell you maybe a different mahalach. We don't have too much time, right? No. 3 minutes. 7. Okay. So he's very gracious to me, and I don't know to you. But so let me tell you two mahalakim, the two other mahalakim here that could be applied here. One mahalak, which is, again, it's very disputable, which is a long notion mahalak, and I will tell it in two sentences. Have you ever thought about the following problem? You could discuss it on your table on Shabbos night if you wish. Let's say a cow bore a calf, right? Fetus. Calf, right? So the cow is my cow, and she gave birth somewhere, you know, out there on the pasture, a place which doesn't belong to nobody. Who owns now the calf, the newborn? Who owns it? Have you ever thought about that? You thought, yes? Did you? Who owns it? So don't push it by anybody that it belongs to the balakar. But why is it so push it? Did I ever make a opinion on that? It's a bone of the pasture. Now, here you just... Yeah, it's a nice discussion in the Shabbat day, if you have nothing else to do.
Right.
But and it, you might calm down the stormy water sometimes. But Reb Shimon says it's of a poshut. Reb Shimon, Shai Yoisha says, yes, it's of a poshut. Because if you produce something, or something that belongs to you produces, it's yours. In other words, but for you, it's of a poshut. He said, yes, it's actually poshut. Because if you created it, it's yours. Now, he discussed it in context of the din of Mishtar Shilei and other things, but this is a principle that he comes up with. According to this, any kind of an innovation, certainly I own it. Problem would be only with Dovah Shei B'Mamish. But if we hold the Dovah Shei B'Mamish bylaws applies, then certainly, being that I created it, should be enough to be stormy owned. In other words, I don't need to make a kinyan to own the Dovah Shei B'Mamish. It's just mine because through me it came into reality. It's a quite novel way how to look at things. Okay, but it might possibly be. But then there's something else. And this is probably the bottom line. There are other ways too. I don't want to say otherwise because you see, if you look at the Divrei Markil, he has also other mahalakim to talk about, but we don't have enough time for this. And really, what Bederach Klal, the mainstream of Rabbonim and Poskim would apply in this particular case is, which is true, what is called Dinan Machos Hadin. There is a sefer which is called Shai to Tshuvas, His Oyrus Tshuvas. Nobody ever heard about it. The sefer, His Oyrus Tshuvas, that's the name of the sefer. His name was Reb Shimon Sofer. Reb Shimon Sofer, this Reb Shimon Sofer was a son of the Ksav Sofer. He was killed by the Nazis in Yimach Shemom at the age of 90 plus. The tremendous number of them, but his sefer, the Shuva sefer that he wrote, is unique, extremely unique. I don't know, you can't say extreme. If it's unique, it's not extremely unique, it's unique. But it was, but to say so, right? Why is it unique? And if, you know, many people who print a sefer write in the Akdomo, especially if it's a halacha sefer. Yes, I write the halacha and so on and so forth. Please don't rely on me. Fine. How serious are they about it? But just look how they write it. You know, they write it too, if you really didn't mean it. But he really meant it. You know why? Because on every page of the sefer, literally every page of the sefer, on top of the sefer, it says, Haloche v'lo lemaise. Haloche v'lo lemaise. Huh? You know that? Yes. On the top of the sefer. On the top of each page. Haloche v'lo lemaise. He really meant it. Agruda yeke. And he really meant it. He really meant it. Okay. So now he is the one, right? And but you also have the Sholem Eishiv and the others also who already hinted it, but he is the proponent of all of this. This is Machlus. You have it in the Ma'amikai Messiah. I mean, there's a Remo in Timishin Samachtes. It's in the very last page of the Ma'amikai. It's the Ramo here, in Shin Samach Tes, the end of Shin Samach Tes, and it's the last line almost. It says, it quotes the Chuvas HaRashbo, the lo yomrin din machuse eile, when do you say din machuse? Bedovo sheyesh bo hanol lemelech, oy shu letakon et bnei amdine. Takon et bnei amdine means, anything that we will do also, chukim matbeah, currency. When are the kinds of regulations that must be for the benefit of commerce, for the benefit of people, have a halachic validity? Now, there's no silence, there's no question about it. If you don't have regulations on intellectual property in this or other way, then you have a very sorry state of affairs. No question about it. Now, yes, there are conditions. When do we apply dilmachus? So only if it's really executed by the authority, if they halacha lemaaseh enforce it. That's true. I'm not saying otherwise. But in principle, din hamachus applies. No question about it. So therefore, I think this is a mainstream argument that everybody could agree to, even if you would not say what we just said in the beginning of this year, or the other machlokes that we had here. But certainly that's no question that din hamachus applies here. So therefore, if someone would ask me, I would tell him, and again, I'm speaking for myself, right? And everybody should consult his local rabbinic authority. But the first question would be, what does din hamachus say about it? If din hamachus clearly prohibits it, and it's something which is enforced, right? Enforced doesn't mean now that it's enforced in each particular case. It might not have the resources for that, but in principle they wouldn't want to do that. So then certainly it should not be done. Then you cannot do it, right? And there might be consequences in Beislin if it happens that you did it, and therefore the massive him money. And this is in addition to other arguments of the Rechos of Mishtashli that I'm sure that Reb Nachum is going to speak about when you learn this Mobiyum. Now, you see, very often what happens is people go to the extreme in either way. So you have the classic cases, you know, when somebody bought a tape or bought a CD, can he now copy it, can he not copy it, and so forth. I have software, can I copy it, can I not copy it, you know. So, Rabbi Kahn would say, Dilma Chusa. Ah, but nobody enforces it, and so forth. Could be. I don't know. As your local rabbinic authority, you know. I must tell you, I personally would rule to the stringency, you know. That's the reason why I don't get phone calls, you know. I think it's not correct. It's not right. It's not correct. And besides the fact that I really hold it, besides Dilma Chusadini, there are other arguments that I personally would hold by, you know. But on the other hand, I will tell you, I might show you. You know, we have other chibus where we do this more professional. But we produce this one, not professional. But we, in other chibus, we did professional. So we needed a page from Shemish, but from Simon, I don't remember Simon. So the best available print for this kind of production would be the Morosh Lahanchim, you know, the new ones, the real new ones, you know. That you have bold oysters. So it happens to be that Bom Kabal, he's a friend of mine, I know him very well. So I called him up and asked him if he gives me permission to copy a few pages. He started to laugh without any phone. Probably I was the first person in history that called him up to take permission to copy a few pages. Okay, but you know, I felt the fact that I knew he was going to give me permission, so I shouldn't have called him, you know. But, you don't make a joke now. But in principle, I really do believe that you don't need to ask on page or two or something of that sort. If people wouldn't buy it, you know, and also I don't think that a din machus on this kind of stuff. So I really would be lenient on this case, you know, see, and sometimes lenient as well. But otherwise, in principle, I think the guiding line, way of thinking should be the concept of din machuse, and that the Shabbat should help you, should be matliach, and not be discouraged to come again because of my class.
I just want to announce, as Rakhim said, eventually we will be doing this topic, but next week's topic probably will be Hatzogas Gvul competition. start off with that.
Week, right?
What?
You're going to have
and you know, it can go more than 1 week, each topic. We'll have to play it by ear. I'm going to go to the next one.